Running Wild with Christine, sex, success, and other slippery rabbit holes. Welcome to episode 55 with Alex Wilton Regan. Hi, Alex. How are you?
Woo! I'm good, babe. How are you?
I'm so good. So you guys, Alex, this episode has been a long time coming.
I know. I'm so sorry. I think we've been trying to do this for about a year.
Basically a year, because Adam Lennon, from whom you've heard a long time ago, is Alex's partner. We talked about you on that episode, and then we talked about you on the episode with, oh my gosh, I'm blanking.
Neil Fox,
that's right. And I think I mentioned you in a couple of them anyway. We'd be like, oh yeah, we're done. And then you've been so busy.
I know I have, but thank you for having me on. Especially now I know how fucking cool your intro is. Sex, success, and other slippery rabbit holes. It's amazing. I love it. It's really good. I need a tagline like that to go on my business cards. Maybe you can think of something for me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was just like, I'm going to talk about whatever. What are the things that are always somehow come up? Those are the things. So Alex is an actor, a voiceover artist, activist, feminist, and now director.
I know, that's a bit mad, isn't it?
It's crazy.
It's a bit crazy to add that one.
Crazy. So you played noticeably Glenn Close's daughter in The Wife in 2017. You're the voice of Aya in Assassin's Creed. You're the founder of Play for Calais, which is a nonprofit that brings cinema and play to refugees. And you just submitted a short film that was selected in Sci-Fi London's 48-hour short film challenge called She Lies Sleeping.
Correct. Very good.
Holy crap.
Yeah, all true.
That's
all true.
Like,
thanks,
so babe. Much in the last 2 years.
I think anytime I feel depressed, I'm just going to come back onto your podcast and be like, hey, can you remind me of all the stuff I've achieved so I can just slap myself in the face a couple of times and get out of my funk?
No, but literally, I've had like 3 or 4 women just like when I do the intros be like, oh, it feels so good to hear someone say it. I'm like, yes.
I agree. It feels really good to have someone else say it. So thank you. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome. I feel like you're one of those women that every time I feel tired and I'm like, I am failing left, right, center. I see your things. I'm like, yeah, so we're all really busy and we all feel like we're failing and we're all not doing enough.
Yeah, the woman who's written a book, runs a podcast, and works in film and television. God, you're a huge failure, Christine. How do you get out of bed in the morning? My God.
No, like, but it's crazy. You were just...
I think that about you, though, because we've got your book on our shelf, sweetheart. So yay. I think that about you. So, you know, I think that's pretty... I think you're doing amazing stuff.
Thank you. It's so easy to get caught up in your everyday stuff of just being like, ugh. This one project I've kind of left aside for 3 months and like, you're like, shit.
And especially when you're self-starters, self-generators like we are, it's really hard. You know, the struggle is real. You know,
absolutely.
We're not brain surgeons and, you know, we're not women living in the middle of, you know, the Democratic Republic of Congo, but it's all relative. So
yeah. Absolutely. Speaking of which, do you want to talk a little bit about your short film? Because I feel like it touches on a lot of things. Like, I wasn't surprised that this was the topic that you chose. So there were 4 parameters to this 48-hour challenge,
correct.
Right?
Correct. Yeah. So Sci-Fi London run a film competition every year. And you apply as a team. Our team was called Baxter's Brunch. I have no idea why the producers chose it. And then we get, on Saturday morning at 11 a.m., you get 4 criteria. So one is your title, which is She Lies Sleeping. So we don't get to choose that. And then the other is a prop. In our case, it was a cable going into a battery pack.
Yeah.
The other is the optional sci-fi theme, in which case this is the government collecting DNA data.
Yeah.
For us, and the other is a line of dialogue, which is the line of dialogue it's the opening line to the film, which is something like I say it in French actually,
because
I just wanted to be a little bit difficult with it.
I heard your voice
a little bit.
Right away. Like, that's my
so the line is something like, okay, they should be here by now. Have you had any contact?
Yeah.
So that was the line. And you have to include all 4 of those things, otherwise your film doesn't qualify, basically.
Okay.
So of course our film did include all of those things. But we were super lucky. Like, to be honest, everything just came together. I had a very clear idea of what I wanted to do ahead of time, which was I knew I wanted to tell a story about asylum seekers and refugees. And the two are different. An asylum seeker is a person who is seeking refuge in a country before they become a refugee, before they actually are given refugee status. So I knew I wanted to do that. But the writer who has been doing this for 10 years is very specific, and rightly so, that not a single line of the script shall be written ahead of Saturday and being given. Of course he's right. I mean, look, some people do cheat. Of course they cheat, and they write the script ahead of time and they shoehorn in the four criteria. Mate, I'm sure some people have cheated in the past and probably made an entire film before the criteria was emerged. But Al Montgomery, if you're listening, he is right. Of course he is, about following the rules. And so nothing was written or plotted or planned ahead of time. The only thing I knew that I wanted was the theme, which the focus, the subject, I wanted that to be about asylum seekers and refugees. And I knew that the tone, I wanted it to be a drama and not a comedy. So I kind of had those two things in my mind. And then the rest, as they say, is history. We got these four categories, and everything just seemed to work really well, because She Lies Sleeping, it alludes to something quite dark and macabre, I thought. So that was great. The battery pack and the cable, that seemed pretty easy. Yeah. We thought, okay, we can get that in. That's not a problem. And the government collecting DNA. So governments already collect. They already collect migrant fingerprints. And so we were just like, well, what if we take it to the next step?
Yeah.
Which probably will happen, certainly within our lifetimes, but within the next 5 to 10 years, I would imagine that governments will start collecting DNA samples for either age testing or, you know, sort of age testing, which is what happens to the girl's storyline in our film, or, you know, first port of entry, blah, 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 blah. So it was like the universe really wanted us to do it. That's how I feel. I feel like the universe wanted us to make this film.
It was awesome, honestly. And like, I tweeted it last night, and then some person commented, like, this is a lot better than I expected. And it's such a good
thing. I saw that.
When you have low expectations because it's a 48-hour project, and you're like, how much can you actually get done in 48 hours, knowing the pressures of productions? It actually worked out perfectly. Like, it was
a very touching film. That, the credit of that goes to my team, really. I had a great team around me. Like,
awesome.
You know, we finalized, we started writing the script at about 6 p.m. About 6 p.m. Saturday, we'd finalized the plot. About 9 p.m. Saturday, we started writing the script. About 4 a.m. Sunday morning, I wanted to throw the writer out the window. and at 6:30 a.m., I had gotten out of bed. I was already showered. I was already ready to go. It was 6:30. I stormed it. I was like, you need to give me a script now because my actors arrive in half an hour. It's really stressful. It's really stressful. Okay. The producer was like, I think we should make you some coffee. I said, I think that's a good idea. So anyway, so the amazing writer who inevitably clearly wrote a gem of a script, Al Montgomery, he gives it to me at 6:30 a.m. At 6:45, I'm printing them, and at 7, people started arriving, including my actors, handing out the scripts, talking the actors through it, talking the DOP through it. Yeah. I've been up all night doing a shot list anyway. Turns out they come in really handy. Who knew? So doing my shot list, giving my shot list to the DOP, talking over things that I wanted with him, how are we going to achieve the message of the film, how are we going to shoot it, talking the actors through it, doing any final minor script changes. Then you're speaking to costume, then you're speaking to makeup, then you're speaking to hair, then you're speaking to sound department, then you're talking about voiceover stuff. And it's just amazing. It kind of just all comes together.
It's crazy.
Lord knows how, but it does. And having incredible people on set, and just the good fortune of, like, our editor came to set.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely brilliant, you know, invaluable, having a pair of eyes there who's already thinking about how he's going to cut it together.
Yeah.
So incredibly useful, you know. The composer, amazing. The sound designer, amazing. And it really gave me such a profound appreciation of what each department does. And when people bring the best of themselves and the best of their skills and the best of their talents, they just blew me away. They made my job very, very easy. And the film would not be as good as it is without them. I'm absolutely certain of that.
All the 10,000% moving pieces, certain. Yeah. It's insane when you see how things eventually work out, especially in that industry that we just, you know, a lot of people have no contact with whatsoever other than consumption. It's like once you get in.
So true.
I remember when I first, like, oh yeah, we didn't say this. We first met 3 years ago.
Years ago now. I think more like five, babe.
It was May 2016.
Okay, 3 years ago.
So it feels like this would have been our fourth can together.
This has been our fourth can into 2019. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
So we met at can through Adam.
Looking very glamorous, both of us.
Oh my gosh, you looked amazing with that blue velvet dress. I'll never forget it. It was your friend who designed it, right?
It was my friend Nina designed it. Yeah. Her name's Elisa Lex de Castro Peak. She's an amazing designer and she runs a company called By Hand London, which you can all check out on Instagram. Yes. It's stunning.
It was amazing. And then we just, I think it was Adam who was like, because I met him through my job regarding tickets. And then he was like, oh, you should meet my girlfriend, Alex. She's also bilingual. And you guys can punch away. But yeah.
And we're both firecrackers. So there you go.
Entirely. And back then, I remember you were like, you should come into the industry, it would suit you. And I was like, Beth, nah.
And look where you are now. You
That's
see?
Crazy.
I knew all along.
Yes, you did. Oh, so now I understand much better the frustrations and immense joys of this industry.
Yeah. I think that's a very good point, is the extreme highs, the extreme lows, the extreme frustrations, the extreme elations.
Yeah.
You know?
It's exhausting.
Yeah, completely.
It's exhausting. But so essentially you guys should check out She Lies Sleeping. It'll be in the description and it touches on super hot topics that actually, you know, like I said, you founded Play for Calais, so you've been involved and you're also really vocal politically.
I know. I mean, I'm sure many of my fans on Twitter are like, could you just shut the fuck up, please, and just talk about movies, TV, and video games? But alas, I cannot.
It must be exhausting living in the UK right now.
It's horrendous. I am a patriot through and through. I love my country. I love the United Kingdom. And I think that's partly why I find the whole thing so distressing, so upsetting, watching the lies and the fraud and the illegality of the Brexit campaign win out over democracy. You know, this is not democracy. Democracy is not following the fraudulently won, illegally run result of a campaign to leave the European Union. That's not democracy. You know, you can't call that democracy in my humble opinion.
Yeah.
And furthermore, given that our democratic process has been so grossly undermined by this whole Brexit process, there's no doubt in my mind that we should be running a second referendum,
yeah.
you know, that is really safeguarded against false news, external money sources coming in, overspending, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
You know? Absolutely. It's not a result I can respect. Not because the referendum didn't go my way. That's one thing.
Yeah.
But more fundamentally, if you give in to, you know, overspending, if you give in to foreign money, if you give in to fake news, if you give in to foreign interference, well, fuck it. You might as well just give away your democracy. Yeah. And that's what we're doing here with Brexit.
Yeah, it's insane. And I think it just comes also at a time where, like, you can now see people who did vote in the direction that the vote went going, the fuck? Mm-hmm. And I think that's really just another sign of, like, the European, like, more generally European, the European region. It's just so crazily, like, extremely volatile emotionally. Like, I feel like the reactions and the decisions that have been made in the last 5 years have been so deeply, like, non-rational and, like, reactionary to bad shit happening, which did happen, that now you're just like, okay, guys, when are we going to just, like, realize that that's what's actually going on and that every single massive swing to the right, and I'm not saying to the right, like left and right,
No, you're talking about the far right.
Far.
Yeah.
Like racist.
Yes.
Right.
Racist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic.
Exactly. Is all reactionary to volatile emotions that we cannot put into a system that was not built for that.
Yes, I think I'd probably be inclined to agree with what most of what you're saying. It's I think it's a very sad time. I think it's a very dark time, and I think it's quite a dangerous time because you know, my cousin turns 100 this summer.
Oh,
she was born in 1919, and she survived the Holocaust. She was a Jew in Danzig, which is a state that I believe used to be the free independent state of Danzig. And I think it now belongs to Poland after the war. But, you know, she was a Jewish girl growing up there who managed to survive the Holocaust and the rise and fall of Nazism. And she says this is the worst she's seen it since the Nazis originally fell. She says this is the worst. You know what? I'm inclined to fucking believe her. She knows a damn sight more about it than I do.
Yeah.
You know? And it's terrifying. And I think we have taken our freedoms for granted. Mm-hmm. I think we've taken our civil liberties for granted. Mm-hmm. I think we've taken freedom of information for granted. I think we have taken socialist aspects of Western European governments, such as the NHS, universal healthcare, free education, free higher education, for granted.
Absolutely.
And whoops, look, lo and behold, everything's moving further and further towards the right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not actually good for society as a whole. It may be good for corporations.
Yeah.
It may be good for individuals who want to pay less tax. It is not good for society as a whole. Societies thrive when they are educated and their health, both mental, spiritual, and physical health, is all well maintained.
Yeah.
So unless we do that, it's not good.
No.
You know?
No, and I think it's really difficult, like you were saying about your Twitter fans, to like be in the entertainment business and not feel bad for voicing your opinions, whether they are political or feminist or, you know, what whatever stance you're taking in an activist perspective, because of the focus on the narratives, I think it's doubly important to come from a perspective of a storyteller's view and also realize the importance and the legitimacy of storytellers within this, because we like to, you know, I don't know if this happens to you, but I keep like having these discussions with people who follow the likes of Jordan Peterson and such, and they're like, you can't debate facts. And I'm like, okay, let's just like, I'm at the same time trying to define the words that they're using for them, like with them, and like, let's base ourselves in the same words, and also then show them that the definitions are subjective, and therefore the definition of truth and fact is questionable.
And yes,
when you find yourself having those kinds of conversations of like, dude, we're not speaking the same language. It applies to all of those, you know, pillars of society that are problematic right now, where you're like, okay, well, we're having parallel conversations.
I think when you start to undermine what is actual fact, that's when shit gets bad.
Yeah.
That, you know, I don't think anyone listening to this podcast, as far as I'm aware, I don't think we've ever lived in such an age of misinformation.
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember, like, you know, the Telegraph, for example, which is a British newspaper over here for people who don't know, it didn't used to be quite so absurd. It didn't used to be quite so full of lies. You know, it used to be a respected right-wing newspaper, you know, that favored conservatism, but that's okay. That's not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
You know, but now it just kind of descends into just lies, you know. The same with a lot of the tabloids, the same with, for example, Fox News, which is a channel simply designed to spout 24/7, you know, ultra right-wing and conservative news and support Trump's ego. But all of these kind of things, we're living in an age of misinformation, and it's just odd.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's partly why the Brexiteers won, is they capitalized on the age of misinformation.
Yeah.
And suddenly people go, we're fed up of listening to experts.
Yeah.
I mean, just think about what a stupid sentence that is. We are fed up of listening to the experts. Well, then in that case, what's the point in expertise? What's the point in people being professors? What's the point in science?
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to, for example, if you take it to the total, to the nth degree, you know,
yeah.
It just, I find it, you know, listen, there are going to be some people listening to me right now rolling their eyes going, shut up, woman. And they will be saying, shut up, woman,
yeah.
Which FYI is a little bit sexist.
Yeah.
My gender has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But they'll be saying, shut up, woman, you know, because they will be thinking, and rightly so, opinions are like assholes. Everyone has one.
Yeah.
Everyone has an opinion, right? But when you have a fact, it's like, fuck off already.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's what I feel like off. It's really interesting that some of, you know, the anti-feminists and mm-hmm. base their arguments on the fact that you people are ignoring facts. And I'm just like, you are putting facts on your side of the agenda and twisting the narrative. So yes, we can base everything, we should base everything on facts, but we should also allow for the social analysis of it. And that's where things are blurred, because you're talking about an analysis, which is, you know, invariably from someone's point of view.
Yeah.
And it's really, for me, interesting that...
Can you give me an example, sweetheart? Give me an example of that.
Well, in conversations about gendering,
mm-hmm.
Especially with the transgender thematics, they'll be like, mm-hmm. well, men are, as a fact, more this and this and this. And biologically, you know, gender assigned at birth, men and women are more such and such and such. And therefore, you can't say that gender doesn't matter. And it's like...
We're not saying gender doesn't matter. We're saying, can we expand the conversation beyond, do you have a penis or do I have a vagina?
Absolutely.
That's basically what we're saying, right?
Exactly. And so I think it's really interesting, like you're saying, in the age of misinformation, people will be like, let's remember the facts and then like entirely change the conversation. And I'm like, ugh. I feel like it's really difficult to stand for anything right now because of the dialectic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because people will just be shut up woman.
Oh, but they can just fuck off. I just don't have time for that anymore.
Right?
I'm like, I really, you know, I have a lot of respect for people who, for example, the people who voted Leave, who are now regretting their decisions and reaching out on Twitter under the hashtag Remainer Now, for example. Like, I have a huge amount of respect for them. Have a lot of respect for the men who are coming out and saying, hey, I'm a feminist. You know, if they want to call themselves a feminist or a male feminist or an ally or whatever, that's totally up to them.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of respect for these people who are expanding and growing. And you know, I had to learn a lot about inclusion and white feminism and my white privilege and so on and so forth. And it's really important that I do learn about that stuff. And I still ain't no expert on it, you know?
No.
And I appreciate people bringing me up to speed on the thinking that I need to know about that's relevant. I am so over trying to convince, you know, people who type like four-year-olds on Twitter with some misogynistic drivel, you know, about how I should get back in the kitchen because, you know, that's where my place is or whatever. I'm just like, oh God, I don't have time for you. I'm busy changing the world, mate.
Yeah,
sorry.
And that's the thing. And that's, I love that you said that, because I feel like the people that we would be arguing with, should we choose to spend their energy that way, and we shouldn't, are people who think that they know. They know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whilst we are... So you speak French, so you might have actually seen... Did you see that video that just came out from Angèle? Balance
non.
Toi?
What was it?
Oh my God. I'll put it in the description. So Angèle is one of the biggest pop stars from French music right now. She's the sister of Roméo Elvis, who's like one of the biggest rappers in France right now. So both of them are dominating. And they're from Belgium, actually.
Yeah.
But I'm saying French charts. And so she has a song called Balance Ton Quoi in reference to Balance Ton Porc, which is the French hashtag for Me Too.
Yes.
Which is much more violent. Which basically means like throw your pig under the bus.
Throw your pig, yeah.
And she did this entire video sort of denouncing all forms of sexism and misogyny from all layers of society. And yeah. Her t-shirt, just the uniform sort of from their Sexism Academy, says feminist in progress.
What does it say? Sorry, say that again. It
says feminist in progress. And I
Great.
Think like that,
I love that
concept of just like, we're in progress, we're learning. You're yes. not like, she's in the lyrics of the song, she's very sort of like, I know you didn't mean to or know or whatever, but you know, let's like go to the
let's
academy.
Talk about it. Let's get it out
learn.
There. Yeah. Let's make things better.
Exactly. And I think that's really where the solution and the world changing will happen, is in the admission that we're in progress.
Yes, and we are all in progress, you know, women included. You know, I know a lot of women who are bad feminists or just white feminists or all the rest of it, you know, and we all need to check that shit continuously.
Yeah.
And of course, I would always advocate that the more that men can get behind us and get on side with us, the better things will be, and also the faster change will come.
Yeah.
You know, because men still hold the balance of power. There's no denying it, you know, and there are certain situations where it is more effective for my boyfriend, Adam, who we've mentioned, for example, to take the lead and speak out, because people just won't listen to me because I'm a woman.
Yeah.
So, but if he says it, they'll listen. So how great to have someone like him as an ally, or Neil Fox as an ally, yeah. or any of our very wonderful, brilliant friends, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of situations as well where, you know, you and I hold the privilege, and we should make
yeah.
room for other people who will rather listen to us than other people.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 for sure.
Understanding that such a hierarchy is not, in my opinion, is not conducive to change. I don't like that the hierarchy
yeah.
is there, but it's there.
It's there. So we need to acknowledge it and talk about
there.
It.
Yeah. It's easy to just be like, we need to undo and unlearn and smash the patriarchy. Yes. But in the meantime,
yeah.
we're stuck in a system for
yes.
now that we should use to our advantage. And it was, oh, I think Adam shared it, actually. You know, Scandinavian Dream Girl on
yeah,
Instagram.
Yeah, she's great.
Was
I introduced Adam to her.
Did you? Yeah, he did. And
yeah.
he said that on the podcast.
Yeah.
And then he introduced it to me.
I was like, you think I'm a radical feminist? Go and follow Scandinavian. And I am so not a radical feminist, by the way. I'm so not. I'm like, I'm feminist with like a small F.
Yeah.
But she's an amazing woman.
Amazing.
Woman. So
and
I
she
was thrilled
saying,
when Adam started
yeah.
following her, actually.
And she was saying, like, oh, don't blame women who profit from being sexualized, because this is the way that we thrive in the system that we were given by the patriarchy in general. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Like, acknowledge that the system is here. And if you loophole into what men have given you,
yeah.
you cannot be mad at us for taking
no,
what
you
we
can't
can.
Be mad at us. But you know what? I do think it's sad that women either have to do it
yeah.
or continue to choose to do it. And by the way, I say that as a woman who's an actress who
yeah.
works in one of the most sexist, misogynistic, patriarchal industries in the world. So I am not innocent of having
yeah.
profited in certain ways from the patriarchy. You
yeah.
know? But I think what I find, and I never begrudge a woman from profiting from that patriarchy. I just think it's sad that in so many circumstances that we see, women are forced into situations
mm-hmm.
that they would not have chosen to be in themselves if there were not such a violent and vicious patriarchy at play at
yeah.
times
yeah.
against certain women in society.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
Absolutely.
For example, like, I have zero moral objection to prostitution
yeah.
whatsoever. And I know there are sex workers who legitimately choose to be sex workers.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I also know that there are women who sell themselves for sex because they need to feed their children
yeah.
and they don't have another choice. And for me, that's not good enough
yeah.
in our society. All women should have a choice to do whatever they want, you know? And if they truly emerge from that and they go, yeah, I find
yeah.
sex work fulfilling, great, good for them. I will support them until the hilt, and I want them to be protected.
Yeah.
And I want them, you know, and I want them to be protected and taxed so that they're contributing to society and they feel like a valuable member of society and all these things that other countries have done that protect sex workers. But I want to make sure that women really have the choice.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not a last resort, that they've been asked, hey, do you want to do a course in this or a course in that, or so on and so forth, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of strong.
So I think it's about choice. It's about choice.
Yeah.
You know, you choose to be a housewife, I will support your right to be a housewife to the hilt. But if you don't want to be a housewife, I will also support your right to do that.
And I think there's a lot of, like, as much as, you know, there's a power and sort of being listened to hierarchy, there's also a moral one that's very much at play that we have a hard time sort of talking about, just because it is such a hard time to talk about things without being chastised for saying the wrong thing, because ultimately we just assume that people should know exactly how to express themselves in a very clear way that will not, you know, offend. Or like, I say shit all the time, and this is why I chose to podcast on certain topics more than to write about them, is because when I write, it's stuck. It's stuck on the paper, and people can like be like, you chose to write that down. Whereas when I'm speaking, I somehow can contradict myself in two words and be like, shit, I'm still trying to figure out what I'm trying to say and how I'm trying to say it. Like, this is a work in progress. Like, there's stuff that I said in the first few episodes that now I'm like, oh God, you did not know that. You did not know that yet. And I'm sure that'll continue to happen if I'm doing this correctly. But where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. The hierarchy within our groups, like the groups that we quote unquote agree with, you know, the people on our side. And you're still sort of like kind of judging people. Like, you know, I'm still very much guilty of this, of like looking at some of like my acquaintances and being like, ugh, like, why do they have to do that? and I'm just like, fuck, actually I suck. Like, that's not a good way to do it. And I saw your post, this is making me think of, you're quite open on social media about, the effects that the entertainment industry has on just simply like how you should look and what you should, you know, physically be like, and the pressures on your body.
Oh my God, don't frighten the shit out of me.
So Adam, everyone just doesn't know what's just happened.
Christine was waving at me behind, and I saw this figure approach in the background.
Hi, Adam.
She's saying hi. And then my partner just walks in.
We're just recording.
Come and
finally,
listen to some things and learn some things about feminism.
Aww. Oh, you guys are so cute.
Okay, you have to go away now because
I'm
leading the conversation this time.
Thanks,
baby.
He says as he coyly walks away from the couch.
He's such a sweetheart.
Oh my God, I was like seeing him in the background.
Scared
I was, like,
the
is
shit out of me. I just
him?
Saw this really tall person walk up behind me in my camera screen. I was like, what? I thought Christine's waving to my murderer. It was horrendous. It was awful.
Could you imagine if that was that could actually be a friend.
In other news, baby, these headsets are definitely soundproof. I did not hear you come in at all. we are absolutely certain that the headsets are soundproof.
Oh,
right,
gosh.
Where were we? We were talking
you're very open on social media about the pressures of looking a certain way for the entertainment industry.
Well, basically, to give listeners a sort of very quick summation, basically it's bullshit. So that's my very quick summation. Three words, it is bullshit. Because, so obviously the entertainment industry was, you know, set up by men and kind of originally, you know, run by very powerful male studio heads, and actresses were bought, literally bought, and under contract to certain big, powerful Hollywood studios. And yes, we've had wonderful female directors throughout time, and yes, we have had wonderful female producers, but they are few and far between.
Yeah.
You know? And thankfully that is changing, and that's great. However, the male gaze is very much about the extremely skinny female body.
Yeah.
And I think it's very hard for audiences to understand just how skinny we are talking here. But I mean very, like very skinny, skinny, slim, skinny people, which, because everyone is skinny and slim, you put them next to each other on screen, and suddenly they all look normal. Yeah. And then you put someone like me, who's actually a normal size. I'm a size 10 in the UK, which is a size 6 in the US. And that is the, you know, the borderline upper bit of like, she's getting a bit chunky there. And I think that's weird.
That's ridiculous.
Because I'm a 10 UK, 6 US. And
you're
next
a small
to
person
the in- average, yeah. But next to the average actress, I look large. But that's because they are half the size of me. You know, a size 4 or a size 6 UK type of thing, which is about a size 0 to 2 US. And it's a real problem, you know, because you put someone like me on the screen next to all the other actresses and people go, God, she's a bit big. So you take me out of the equation and suddenly you only have thin, thin people next to other thin, thin people, but they all look normal.
Yeah.
And that's the image that we're feeding our boys and girls that are growing up.
Yeah.
You know, so no wonder society has body dysmorphia syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, even just the rise, you know, I know Kit Harington talked about it. He plays Jon Snow in Game of Thrones, and he talked about it when he did The Bodyguard and he has to take his top off, and he talked about his diet and exercise regime. And look, it's very lovely seeing an attractive male with his shirt off on camera. Yes, mm-hmm. objectification screams everyone listening to this podcast. Yeah. Yes, objectification, but women are objectified 65,000 times a day. So forgive me if I legit objectify the male star who was in that scene there being objectified.
Yeah.
However, I got to be honest, I find it a bit weird now. I'm like, why is the dad of four taking off his shirt and has a perfect six pack?
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. You know, much as they're all very beautiful and attractive to look at, even I, as a woman who appreciates the male figure, I'm a bit like, it's just weird.
Yeah, like
that these men all have perfect bodies. It's just weird.
Yeah.
The doctor, you know, you're like watching some serious medical drama, and suddenly the doctor gets changed after, you know, a game of squash at the end of a 75-hour week, and he has a perfect body. And I'm like, I just don't believe you.
No.
I just don't believe you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
and I think
like, there's a lot of stuff like that.
There's so much. And I think, you know, yes, it is nice.
It's also extreme now, is what I mean.
It's totally
Sean Connery. You look at Sean Connery getting out of the ocean as James Bond.
Yeah.
He had a good physique.
Yeah.
You look at Daniel Craig now and you can see every muscle in his body. And of course it's physically attractive. It's like a beautiful thing to look at. But I'm not sure that it's always the right story that we're telling with that actor's body. And I think it's just so extreme.
And
so
also, like,
extreme.
What are the implications, like, further than the implications for, you know, the health standards of actors going for these roles? What are the social implications of desire? Like, you know, this keeps happening for some reason, but I guess because I post a lot of like sex-related content, and I do have a lot of half-naked photos of myself splattered around the internet, so people know what I look like, sort of, kind of, by imagination naked, and then they'll meet like my current or former partners and just be like, oh, that's who you're seeing? I'll be like, so just to be clear, you think that my curves are appealing and you like that, so that's a go, but that should be matched with something that has 15 packs on them? Like,
Yeah.
No, first of all.
Yeah, one doesn't equal the other.
No, and like, sometimes I'm attracted to six packs, but most of the times I'm attracted to people.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Yeah, completely.
Like.
And I would and I feel completely the same. I'm not attracted to a gender, and I'm not attracted to a certain type. I'm attracted to a soul, and I'm attracted to a person.
Yeah, and
how I would describe
it. The narratives that we're selling of just like, you should be looking like your ideal mate should look like this, and you know, the main attractive.
And you always know when you're watching a film who the lead girl is, because they're attractive nowadays. And you always know if they're a lead girl and a lead guy of the same age, they're probably going to end up fancying each other and getting it on. I would say that's a little bit repetitive.
Sorry.
Like, and I say this as, you know, and I'm saying all of this as a woman that I think is like, relatively half decent looking, you know, but by Hollywood standards, not enough. I'm terribly normal. by Hollywood standards. I just think it's a little bit silly, you know, and I think a little bit sad, because I think Hollywood and the entertainment industry in general miss out on a lot of exceptionally talented people simply because they are not good looking enough. I can think of numerous people that I went to drama school with, that I trained with, who are infinitely more talented than me and many other working actors today. And they left the industry after 2 or 3 years because they couldn't get a job.
Yeah.
And that is a travesty to lose that talent, you know, simply because they weren't pretty enough. Silly, really.
And it's frustrating as well, I think, like all of those portrayals. Like, I felt, it's so funny when you're saying it's a bit repetitive. When they did, when Shallow came out, or the movie's not called Shallow, it's called The Star is Born, the song is called Shallow.
Yes.
At the end of it, I was kind of like, wow, blah, blah, blah. I cried, of course, da-da-da.
Yeah, we all cried. Don't worry, you're not alone. Everyone cried
like,
with that one,
it seems. It works, like the engineered machine of emotions worked. But
yes.
Looking at Lady Gaga and her character and her performance, I was like, sort of, I sat in it for like a few hours going, are we seriously telling this story again? Are we seriously?
Oh, because it was the fourth time that they told it.
Not even that. No, her story. I'm like, it's Lady Gaga. Why is she the supporting, fixing the male, female? Like, I'm not okay.
Yeah, yeah.
We surely have better stories to tell.
Yeah,
about
I think
characters.
I think that is probably because that is literally the story. And I assume that that Bradley Cooper was doing a sort of
absolutely
match. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's the woman saving the man. I can't wait till I get to play the fucked up, drinking, fucking, snorting female.
Yeah,
you know, that's what I'm looking forward to. If any filmmakers are listening to this, I'm really good at all that stuff.
Yeah
so, yeah, but you know, I may even start writing something about that, because I just think women are infinitely more complex and interesting and naughty and outrageous and boundary pushing than we have been portrayed on screen a lot of the time.
And so, speaking of strong female characters, IMDb tells me that you play Mary Shelley.
I do. I did. I had the incredible good fortune of shooting a film at the very end of last year called A Nightmare Wakes. And it is the story of, it's about Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And it's about her complexities, her multifaceted personality, her unbelievable brain, her exquisite soul, her searing intellect, just everything probably that really I'm not. So I think I probably got very lucky and was punching way above my weight. But I had the best experience. I truly had the best time. I can't say too much yet because I know we're in the very early stages of post-production, if there's such a thing. Like the film's kind of, I'm pretty sure the film's finished from what I've heard.
Yeah.
And now it's the next stage of selling and getting it out there. But it was the best creative experience of my life. Written by a woman, directed by a woman, produced by a woman, and two feminist men at the female producer's side.
Mm-hmm.
Such a dream come true. I lucked out on that one. I feel very humbled and lucky that I got to play Mary, for sure.
I can't wait to watch that when it comes out.
Thanks, sweetie.
It must have been such a stark contrast to your role in The Wife.
Yeah, it was. Like, the wife is all like, so my character in The Wife is all like, she's the director described. So in The Wife, I played Glenn Close and Jonathan Pryce's daughter, and they're the two leads.
Yeah.
And the director described my character as the hearth of the family. So the idea of like warmth and life-giving and, you know, energy and sunshine and stuff. And I think he's right. That was Susanna Castleman's character. That's who I was in The Wife. And then Mary Shelley is all about the stars and the elements and, you know, earth, wind and fire and kind of she's just amazing, you know. It's just amazing. Yeah, it's amazing that I got to play her.
That's so exciting. Yeah, I feel like It's so funny because I follow you on social media and I'm always kind of like on the sidelines watching you go, and I'm like, yay, girl.
Thanks, sweetheart. That's really nice. Thank you. But that's why I think the whole directing thing this weekend was, you know, a bit of a surprise, like, to everyone, including myself, that I loved it as much as I did, and that, you know, I did a pretty decent job, given it's my first film.
That's so exciting. Do you think that, because I've been talking about this with, oh God, who was I talking about this with? Someone who was telling me that they wanted to, that they found out they wanted to direct, and this was probably someone at work, after sort of kind of an accident, kind of like you, just like, oh, we're doing this, are you in? And she was saying that she'd gone through film school, she'd done all these things. No, it was on the podcast. I remember now. like 4 or 5 episodes ago. That because there was no female representation, she just couldn't identify with most of the directors that she had either been taught about or worked with. She was just like, oh, that's not even on my radar as a thing that I might want to do, which is so desperately sad.
I think I definitely have that. I think I personally suffer from a lack of confidence. I know you won't believe me when I say that, but I actually do suffer. I know Christine's face is like, really?
Actually, I suffer hugely. No, my face is like, yeah, because we all do. Like, no matter how much we try to show that we don't, we all do.
So I think I suffer hugely from a lack of confidence, and I really have to be sort of dragged kicking and screaming into the role of the director by these male producers. So there's a group of producers and a writer, and every year these two producers and this one writer, they help create this short. But apart from that, the director changes every year, the cast changes every year, everything changes every year. And so they offered me the job this year, and I was like, yes. And then as we got closer, I was like, no. But actually, I flew back from LA. I was fucking insane. I left LA at 4:30 on Friday. I landed in London 10:30 a.m. Saturday. We got our four criteria at 11 a.m. Saturday.
Oh my God.
Started writing 12 p.m. Saturday. I went to bed at midnight Saturday night into Sunday morning. You know, I threw the writer out the window at 4:30. And then I was up again at 6. And it was just, in fact, I didn't even get up at 6. I got up at 5. I remember getting up at 5 because the birds were chirping. I was like, right, the birds are up. Alex, you can get up too.
Oh my God.
And then shot all day Sunday, worked through the night with our amazing editor and, you know, our composer and everything. It's just insane. I then collapsed on Monday night and slept for 16 hours.
Absolutely. But that's what you do. And I feel like it's so funny because I've been on so many sets this year and on so many different productions, and the way that it's structured in Canada, like if you're starting, it's super easy to be a production assistant in locations, like that's, you know, kind of where everyone starts. And then you pick a different union depending on the department.
Yeah,
but the locations union is the assistant director union. It's the Directors Guild of Canada. And so I was like, ooh, I could be an AD. And you will chuckle because you're like, yeah, of course, Christine, you could be an AD.
You could. That should be a very good AD.
But I have worked with one female first AD this entire year.
If it makes you feel any better, I think I've worked with three first female ADs, but that's over my entire career, which is about 12 years now.
It's ridiculous.
So like, that is crazy. I know, that is completely crazy. I don't worry, babe, like, I'm in agreement with you. And I mean, female directors, I could count them on one hand. I can think of three female directors off the top of my head, maybe five.
I've luckily worked with a lot of female directors on
great
productions lately. And it's been a conscious effort. Like, I'm working on The Terror right now, by the way, if you guys are interested. And I think, like, throughout the first, like, 5 or 6 episodes, it was, like, I think we were maybe less than, what was the statistic? Less than 40% were white people.
That's crazy.
First of all.
Wow.
So, and it's shot in Vancouver, which is, you know, predominantly white Western area of the world. So we had...
That's great that it was so inclusive.
It was super inclusive, but I'm like, wait, the fact that I know that statistic is fucked up. The fact that somebody told me that statistic is fucked up. We should just be the norm.
Get on with it.
But yeah, I think it's the imposter syndrome thing is just incredibly tiring and frustrating, and ties back to the confidence issue that you were talking about, because we're like we're saying at the beginning of episode, look at us, like look how much shit we've done over the last 4 years. And we're still here on a Sunday evening, like with a glass of wine, going, oh, look at all the shit I haven't done.
Why am I such a failure? Why?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. I agree.
It's ridiculous. Like, how many guys do you know who sit there on a Sunday night going, I haven't done enough?
I think, you know what? I think there are many men who do actually sit there and go, I haven't done enough. However, one of the things I would say, from what I see, belongs more in the camp of, I guess, the camp of women and girls and females is perfectionism.
Yeah.
And that's because, remember, Ginger Rogers did everything that Fred Astaire did, but she did it backwards and in heels. Yeah. And that's a very famous quote from Ginger Rogers. She said, I did everything Fred Astaire did, but I did it backwards and in heels, you know? And it's the idea that however high the man jumps, we have to jump twice as high in order to be noticed, because we are women and we are born into a society that considers us subordinate to a certain extent, or inferior to a certain extent from birth. Now, I'm not saying that's not changing.
Yeah.
I think that is changing. I think it's changing rapidly. I think I'm so excited watching my male friends become fathers and raising their sons beautifully, you know, and raising their daughters beautifully. It has been and continues to be a beautiful experience to watch my male friends father their children. And I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited by how the young ones, you know, the sort of 0 to 4 year olds of today are going to turn out. I'm really excited by that.
I'm also really excited, and I wanted to correct myself, because I also think that a lot of men probably feel that way on a Sunday afternoon and just have never been taught to say it or express
it. Also true. And that's the bullshit of the patriarchy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where the patriarchy's fucking over the men too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think it's, I'm really impressed with, like I'm working, because I'm at the bottom of the food chain in my industry right now, because I'm starting fresh, I'm surrounded with 20, 21, 22 year olds constantly. And it's really interesting the way that we are communicating, the way that they communicate. I'm like, you're so much better at this than I was 20 years ago.
It's so infuriating, isn't
it? It's great. It's so I love it.
No, yes, I'm taking the piss. I'm taking the piss. It's like...
could have saved us a lot of trouble, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But
No.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I find it infuriating, all these 20 to 25 year olds who are fantastic feminists, super inclusive, super bright, communicate, are saving the planet. I'm like, fuck you guys. I just feel worse about myself now. But actually, it's really inspiring. Like, oh my God, the generation beneath me of female feminists is just on. These women are groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Groundbreaking.
Yeah.
And then they go, I really look up to you. I really admire you. I'm like, are you kidding me? Have you seen the good you're doing in the world? I've done none of this, you know?
But I think that's the great thing about, you know, and sort of tying it back also to the beginning, the piece, the whole argument about expertise. It's like, we have so much more unlearning to do. It's going to be so much harder for us to get to their level. Because
unlearning, that's such a good word. I've never heard that before. Unlearning, I like that. I'm stealing that. Yeah, that's
we
great.
Do, because like we still have the bad habits to break, and habits are hard to break. Whereas when you start fresh, and like you're saying, it's going to be even more jarring with people who are 4 or 5 years old right now. They've just had a quicker time, like in their learning process throughout their teenage years, are going through this that we're going through right now in our 30s. And it's such a more malleable time. And I think it's really, like, even in the relationship piece, like, the shit that you and I probably deal with our partners, it comes from the frustrations of the last 10 years or 15 years or however long we've been in, you know, intimate relationships. Whereas if you start with the script that says there is no script, You're not going, oh, I actually don't want to be
monogamous.
You write
it as you
yeah, go, do
you
I
write
want
it as
to
you
be
go.
Monogamous? Yeah.
So true. You write it as you go as opposed to rewriting it.
Yeah. And I think that's just, you know, it's I often catch myself going, oh, that reflex of just, like you said, it's infuriating. So you're like, you're 22, what do you know? And then you're also like, please teach me. Like, that moment has to come of just being like, actually, yeah, so tell me more.
I think actually, it's so funny. I think I never think, you're 22, what do you know? I think I more look at them and go, you're 22, how the fuck do you know so much? This is really annoying and I feel really inferior right now. And then they're like, no, it's fine. They're like, no, it's fine, because you're like, what, like 28 or something? And I go,
Thank you. Yes,
I am. I'm 28. You're right. Yes, exactly right.
It's so stupid, those little things. It bugs me. I also like get a kick when people are like, so what do you study? I'm like...
I know. We're so vain. Our egos are out of control.
We say as I'm about to head into 3 weeks of Cannes.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to the world of the ego, Riviera. Yeah, it's true.
Oh God, what am I going to do without you guys? You're not going to be there.
He'll be there for 3 days. I might actually come for those for those 3 days. So I might be there for a little bit. But I think it's the first weekend.
Reunion.
Yeah. Which would be really fun.
It'd be
really
so fun. I'm so excited to be there. And also, I feel like it's really comforting to see the change of conversation that we're having from the first Cannes at which we met to now.
Yeah, I mean, well, yes, completely. Completely.
Like, I remember you in the first Cannes being like, I'm fed up with this fucking shit. Standing outside of
me?
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know if you remember, we were standing outside of what's the hotel that we were at?
Probably the Majestic is the big posh one. Yeah.
We stood outside of the Majestic having a cigarette and you were just like, I'm not coming back, this place bums me the fuck out. I'm like, this whole thing is, I can't. And I was like, yeah, I could see how that would work. And then like the year after that you're like, it was like directly post the Weinstein exposure. Thing. And we were just all like, yeah, so remember the shit we were talking about? Yeah. A little bit of a change. And then, you know, all of the 70 women march,
of the that's amazing.
Changes that have happened. I'm like, it's still not enough, but like, it's a massive change in 4 years.
Yeah. It's not enough, but it's getting somewhere. It's the beginning of something very exciting. And I genuinely hope that everyone listening to this does feel excited and enthused and ready for change and ready for action, whether they're male or female or whatever.
Non-binary or whoever you are. Yeah. Thank you so much for this episode, Alix.
Thank you for having me. I feel like, I don't know what we talked about, but I feel really excited and ready and revved up to go now. So
that's the
I
point.
Hope it was good. And I hope people have enjoyed it. And I hope people do genuinely feel that if they want to reach out to me on Twitter or Instagram, my name's just at Alix Wilton-Regan, or one word on both of them. Please do genuinely reach out and send me your thoughts.
Yeah, I feel like we should, when I edit the episode, I'll like jot down some questions that we posed, and maybe we should do some polls on Twitter or something, see what people think, or on Insta.
Yeah.
Just to like get the conversation going, especially because we talked about so much.
Yeah, no, exactly, definitely. And then I'd love to... when the Mary Shelley film comes out, I should definitely come back once you've watched it, because it's a super feminist film. It's all about the female gaze, you know?
I'm so excited. So,
and we can talk about it and really talk about it and say, hey, where did the director get this? And where did so-and-so get that? And that'd be really exciting to do. That
would be very exciting. And then I think we should do one with you and Adam.
And Adam, when he's not creeping up on me.
Oh my God, we could do that in Cannes and just pre-record it for another time.
That'd be great.
Just sit at a cafe and have a bitch, the three of us.
With wine, definitely.
That's so much wine. All right, peoples, this was the last episode of season one. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back after a can, after this little hiatus that I'm about to embark on. As we've already mentioned, all of the links will be in the description. So feel free to click away, subscribe, follow, like, all of that stuff. Watch Alix's movie, buy my book, all the good stuff. We love you very much.
Woo woo!
Speak
Thanks for listening.
Yay! Bye.
Bye.